Hi everybody, my name's Barbara. I'm a compulsive overeater and I'm really grateful to be here tonight. And I am so excited to speak to you guys because I know you come. I mean, I'm in Los Angeles. I know there's Chantel all the way in Greece and there's people in between all the way in between, I'm sure. So it's really exciting that Overeaters Anonymous is offering recovery to people no matter where we are. Very, very, very cool. So I'm going to tell you about me, how I got here, what happened, and what I'm like today. So I came into Overeaters Anonymous a very, very long time ago. In June 1975 is when I came to OA. And I had just turned 25 years old, and I felt that my life was completely over. I was depressed, demoralized, and absolutely feeling no hope at all that I would ever be able to lose my weight. And the thought of keeping it off was not even in my mind as any kind of a possibility. My top weight was 189 pounds. I came into Overeaters Anonymous at, I think it was 182. And I'm maintaining somewhere around a 70-pound weight loss. My abstinence date started on December the 2nd, 1975, and I've been eating three meals a day and nothing in between since that time. So, how in the world did that happen? Well, how that happened was that I really truly had a surrender. I am so grateful. So grateful that I hit bottom. I really hit bottom. And my very last binge, I want to tell you, I went to any and every length to eat. Now, I'll give you a little bit of history. So as a child, I grew up as a normal weight. I didn't have a weight problem, and it didn't dawn on me that there should be anything different about my weight until I was 13 years old. And I was in line taking horseback riding lessons at a new stable. And they, for some strange reason, they had us all lined up and they asked us, and I was there with my friend Donna, and she was in the girl right in front of me in line. And they asked each one of us what we weighed. And Donna weighed 2 pounds less than I did. I was 115, she was 113. That is thin. For me, 115 is just hunky dory. I thought I was overweight. I grew up thinking, feeling very, very low self-esteem, and that whatever, everything about me was wrong. And once I heard those numbers, I immediately thought that I should be Donna's weight. And I started thinking about my eating. I wasn't really obsessed with it. I didn't really notice. At the age of 12, the year before, we were sitting down for dinner. And back in those days, people sat down and a family sat down and they all ate together for dinner. And my mom had prepared a dinner of spaghetti. I won't tell you, she was not a good cook. It didn't really matter. I had two plates, big plates of this pasta. And everybody sitting at the table, I ate more than my dad. He was 5'11 and he had a physical job. He was a mailman, which is a whole other story. And I had so much shame about that. But everyone looked at me and they said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I just want more." Well, I was growing up. I was not growing up emotionally, I was growing up physically. And when I turned 14, there is a the A9 pin ceremony at my junior high, and they had pyramids of brownies in the back of the auditorium. And all I remember was it was a time when my best friend and her family, her parents were at this event, and my parents were there. And unbeknownst to me and to her, our fathers had worked together for, I don't know, 20 years or something, but we didn't even know that. And all I remember was going to the back of the room and getting a brownie, walking up to the front, eating the brownie, and going back and forth and back and forth. My high school career was really punctuated by eating. I started off pretty slowly, and I wasn't binging except periodically. But my very first diet was, it was in 1966. I was eating under 200 calories a day, and my weight went up to 144 from 115. I entered the 10th grade at 115 pounds, and by Thanksgiving vacation, my weight was spiraling up. And I had a high school project from the biology teacher of putting together a DNA molecule. That was our Thanksgiving weekend. We had to figure out how to come back with some kind of something that looked like a DNA molecule. So my best friend and I came up with a great plan, and we decided we were going to make 6-foot DNA molecules, and the molecules were gumdrops. There are 64 combinations in a DNA molecule, and we ate bags of gumdrops, and we came in with these spectacular DNA molecules. Nobody could believe it. By the time, okay, so these are just a couple of the things that I did on my way to getting up to 189. So I started high school at 115. When I graduated high school, I was 153. By the age of 19, I was 189. I had dropped out of college twice by then, and I just kind of gave up on the way that I looked entirely. So I declared myself a hippie, which I just sort of felt like I looked like everybody. And I took off the false eyelashes. I didn't care about the way that I looked. And I kind of dove into that kind of lifestyle in a very superficial sense. I got through college somehow after dropping in and out of college twice, and I ate my way through college. That's how I got through. Chocolate paw prints on every single one of my books, and gaining weight, losing weight, gaining weight, losing weight. My top weight that I know of was 189. And somehow, when I graduated college, I was 23, and my parents bought me a round trip ticket to Europe, and they must have given me some kind of money. I worked my way through college, and I saved my money, and I stayed in Europe for almost an entire year, 11 and a half months. And it was all on my own dime, except for a short stay, 4.5 months in Israel. I lived on a kibbutz, so I didn't have to. I was really supported by the kibbutz by working. And I gained more weight there. I lost my weight when I got on that TWA 747. And within 10 days of being in London, I was eating out of control again. I kept traveling. And the reason why, one big reason, other than the fact I was having a lot of fun, I was also having a really miserable time at the same time because of the binging. I remember days in, I spent, I think it was 6 weeks in France. I had a family member, actually, he's a fourth cousin, I think. And they said, sure, come and stay with us. They didn't speak a word of English. I stayed with them. And I just remember being so lonely and so miserable. I was going to the bakeries in Paris and binging in the gutter with the white bags all around me on the street, and just not knowing what to do. I finally came home because my airline ticket was about to expire, and I had been gone 11 and a half months. And it was not until 8 months after coming back that I found OA. And at that point, I had lost part of the weight that I gained. And as soon as I hit the ground in Los Angeles, it started all over again, and it accelerated. I got back up to 182. I found Overeaters Anonymous just kind of by chance. And in Los Angeles, well, first of all, there was a radio show, and this Dr. Udell, I think his name was, and he had this radio show every day around 5 o'clock. And on my way home from work, I got the job that I had gone to college for. I was very fortunate. I put a list together and I made phone calls. And I worked for a city, actually, it was a city of Burbank. And the job was great, and I was binging, 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 and eating. I was in the work in the park and recreation department, and eating the caramel candies that were supposed to be for the kids at Halloween. That's what I ate. I was going through bags of that stuff, going back and forth from my office to the back of the gym in the building that I was in. And this doctor talked about the state of California. He somehow calculated the weight. how overweight we were. And he came up one day with a solution for people. He had different ways of solutions for weight loss, and one was Overeaters Anonymous. And I had heard about AA from a friend of mine, and who was not an alcoholic, but had a professor who was an alcoholic who talked to, broke his anonymity to his college classes, and she described what she heard in that classroom, and it sounded like me. I went, I am like an alcoholic, but there's nothing for me. There's nowhere. I don't know of a place for people that are fat and eat too much. And this radio show talked about, he mentioned Overeaters Anonymous, and I went to a meeting as soon as I could find one. And at that, my first meeting, my second meeting, actually the first meeting I went to, I went on the wrong night, and I came back the next week and I didn't feel at home. I can't tell you guys that I felt at home at all. But in those days, I was going to leave at the break. We had 2 hour meetings and I was planning on leaving at the break. And a woman came out to my car and she said the words that I needed to hear and got me back into the room. And she said, if you want to lose your weight, you can do it here. And that's what I came here for, you guys. I didn't come here to get spiritual, to have a new network of friends, to socialize, to have fun on the weekend. I came here for one reason, because the weight was killing me. My cat, I don't have enough time to talk about some of the insane things that I did when I was in Europe, hitchhiking with Arabs in Israel to get food. I was cuckoo. I was absolutely out of my mind. I went to any and every length. 23-year-old girl, you don't do that. This is insane behavior, but it didn't matter because food was my drug of choice. And before coming to OA, I thought it would have been a lot better and much more cool to be an alcoholic. It wouldn't show up on my body, is what my mind told me. I don't know that that's true, but I do know that once I came to OA and I kept coming back, even though I didn't understand what was going on, I didn't get it that there were people that were young and old, and there were thin people and fat people and people from different places in the country in that one meeting in Burbank. And it stuck. I didn't get my abstinence right away. It took me 6 months to get my abstinence. I broke it twice. And December 1st, 1975, by the grace of God, was the last time I had a binge. And I had to borrow a car for that binge. My car was not working. I had a list of things that were making me very unhappy, and I had reasons for eating. And all I can tell you now is that there is no reason to eat. I've been in this program a very long time, and lots of things happen in your life, even in 1 year, and 5 years, and 10 years, and almost 50 years. Lots of things happen. The last couple of days have not been my best couple of days. They've been a little emotional. You know what? What I discovered was that the only way to be abstinent is to not eat no matter what. No matter what. No matter what. Because as long as I'm here and I'm alive, there's going to be things that are going to upset me, that are going to trouble me, that are going to make me happy or sad. All the things that go on emotionally, all the emotions that I didn't understand when I got here and I've discovered. Uncovering and discovering and discarding is what my life is about, and it's still that way today. I still have so much to learn about me. This is a journey of a lifetime. That's what this program is. It's a magic carpet ride. I have to tell you, I just got back, my husband and I. Oh, that was something, another miracle. I've been in therapy most of the time since the age of 16, and I haven't been it anyway. I was told by two different therapists that because of my background, my mother was probably emotionally ill. My father was undiagnosed with Asperger's. He couldn't communicate. I really had a lot of problems with boys and men because I didn't have any way. I didn't get to learn these things when I was growing up about how to relate and to trust. And I got married very late in my mid-50s. I met my husband. We just got back from Iceland and Norway. And I can tell you that when I came to this program, I didn't believe it was possible. I love travel. I've traveled to many places in the world since coming here to OA. And no matter what's happening on the plane, it was a 16-hour flight. You know what? The first time I took long international flights, I couldn't figure out like, how do I eat three meals in a day? And what's a day when you keep going across different time zones in the world? Like to eight, I've been to a lot of places more than once, and I finally sort of had to let go of it. And so now it's really comfortable. I'm sitting there, they give you a lot of food. I get to fly business, and they keep like, okay, there's something to eat before. There's breakfast, lunch, dinner, and then they have snacks, and then they have something in the back of the plane. It's like a cruise ship up in the air. But we go on cruises, and I don't care what's going on the cruise. I eat three meals a day and nothing in between. It doesn't apply to me. I absolutely don't think about it. That is such a miracle. You guys, it's an absolute something that I absolutely could never think of or conceive of. So how does this happen? Number one, I really believe I surrendered on December first, that night after that last binge, and I called my sponsor, and she said the unthinkable thing to me. She said, "Get your head out from where the sun doesn't shine." I went, "Huh?" I took the phone. I couldn't believe what I heard, and I put the phone down, and I called another person, and she said, and she had 125-pound weight loss, and she said, "If you want what you have, keep doing what you're doing." And that was the beginning for me. And that was the end of that conversation. So I have the big book here. I read it every day. I start my day with Upon Awakening. And I read that every single day. The pages are getting kind of thin. This is definitely not my original book, but I've had it a long time. And then what happens when I wake up and I wake up on the wrong side of the bed? Well, I wake up on the same side of the bed every night. My husband's on that side. This is my side of the bed. But my thinking, I wake up with sometimes really negative thinking. So what do I do? I do my morning routine is I start off the day with writing. I read Upon Awakening. I have my paper. I have this spiral bound paper, 8.5 by 11. And some days I start off with gratitude. Some days I start off with, "Dear God, help me to uncover, discover, and discard the truth about," and I fill in the blank with whatever's bothering me, and I write. Very often it just goes into my daily review. I do that every day. And my daily review is pretty simple. It's on the page of 86 in the big book. And I simplify it most of the time. So I write about what it. And I, no matter how I wake up in the morning, I do this. So I write about resentment, fear, selfishness, and dishonesty. That's the fourth one. Sometimes I add to that. And it's customized beyond that. And what have I done from someone else? How have I given? What did I do to contribute to my world and my life on this particular day? And it really saves me. When I'm upset, there's other pages. Everything is in this book, you guys. It's absolutely amazing. So all my answers, I don't have to pay $250 an hour for my therapist when I get upset. I make phone calls. I work the tools, but it's on pages here on resentment and how it works. So here we go, page 62. Our troubles we think are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-overrun riot. Well, that's me, but here's what I really like. It's a plane that a life which, and this is page 66, that includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. And I read the next three pages, and you know what? Woof, it's lifted. It's lifted. And if it isn't, and it's the middle of my day and I'm not writing, I call my sponsor and I get to talk for a couple of minutes, and poof, I have a different perspective. I have another way to look at things. I get to look at things like it's not about Not everything is about me, not even close. What about the other person? I learned in this program that other people actually have feelings. Isn't that remarkable? They also have their own ideas and thoughts, and they're not always agreeing with mine. That's remarkable. How do you like that? Before I came here, it was my way or the highway, and my way to lose weight was, well, where there's a will, there's a way. That never worked, you guys. My willpower, my abstinence today is not based on willpower. It's based on God power. So I turn my will and my life over to my higher power, who I choose to call God today. I came in here, I thought I was agnostic. I found another way of thinking about a higher power. And this program is so gentle and so soft. It's like landing in a feather bed because there's so much love. It's unconditional love. That's what I found here. That's the language of this program. It's the language of the heart. It's the language of acceptance. It's the language of compassion. It's the language of new understanding. It's the language I did not know anything about when I came here. I did not grow up learning how to think at all. I lived in resentment and I wanted to get back at you guys. But how did I do that? I got back at myself. I hurt myself. I was always hurting myself, not only with food, but I also did it when I walked through a door. I would bang into the side of the door. I was always looking for a way to punish myself. And I don't do that anymore. I have a different way to live today. My life is truly, it's been a magic carpet ride. I mentioned, I had two therapists that said, sorry, I really feel bad about this, but you're never going to be able to get married. Well, we're coming up on 20 years together. And it's not a bed of roses and a bowl of cherries. I never eat a bowl. I don't eat a bowl of, not of cherries. Well, I've got a really moderate abstinence, and everything is not perfectly smooth. There's ups and downs in every area of my life. But because of this program and the steps and the tools and giving back, I learned about service. I want to talk about that. Service is truly its own reward. I did not grow up in high school or the clubs, the one or two clubs I built, one club that I belonged to, ever thinking about being a contributor to the organization. I didn't know how to do that. I learned that here within my first few weeks in the program. There was a need for a service position in the very beginning, and all I knew is my hand went up, but my hand never went up to volunteer. It was all about me. I didn't have a clue of how to give back. And I have been doing service ever since I got here into this program, and I've had a sponsor, different sponsors. I usually have sponsors for a very long time, years and years, years and years and years. My current sponsor, I believe it's 14 years. I had my sponsor before developed Alzheimer's. The one before that passed away, but I've had maybe four sponsors maybe in my time in the program. I really strongly encourage people to get a sponsor and start working the steps. That's where the miracles start. It starts for me with working the steps. And I have a life that I really can't recognize. I have two stepkids and I have a daughter-in-law. That's like remarkable. I met them when they were in their 20s. Now they're in their mid-40s. And we have family gatherings here. I make dinners. I absolutely adore them. I have such an amazing life today. I have a dog. I live in the suburbs. And, it's been kind of difficult. We started remodeling our house again in February, and my house looks like a warehouse gone crazy. It looks like someone just poured boxes of stuff, and it's very all on the boxes on the floor and clothing on racks, and it's I like neat and tidy. I'm like, I want everything with a little, in a box with a bow on the top. That's what I'm comfortable with. It hasn't looked like that for a while. And so what do I do to deal with this? Well, what I used to do is anything, flew in front of me that didn't agree with me. I mean, I was binging every single day. I was not a periodic. I was absolutely not a periodic eater. It was every day, no matter what. And on the way home from work, I had my binge places. And that's what I did. I had one or two binges on the way home. And then at 10:30 at night, I would go back out and I would get more food. And I would throw it away that night and say, I'm not going to do it tomorrow. That tomorrow never came until I found Overeaters Anonymous. I didn't take food out of the trash, but I was back out there at my bakeries and the grocery store, starting my binge after work every single day, or sometimes it would start at lunchtime when I'd go to a restaurant. There was nothing that I could do about it until I surrendered, until I found a spiritual way of life. And that was really the beginning for me, the surrender behind Baskin-Robbins ice cream at that last binge when I went into a bakery in this grocery store and I was stocking the food like a tiger hunting its prey. And that was me and food. That was absolutely what I had to do. And sitting in my car, which wasn't my car, it was in the borrowed car behind that ice cream store. I just broke down and I said, I can't do this anymore. I have a choice. I can drive this car over the bridge and hopefully in my life, or I can drive home and make a phone call, but I cannot live this way anymore. I couldn't live in my skin for one more minute the way that I was living my life. And that was the beginning for me, you guys. I didn't know what a higher power was. I just knew that something had to help me. And it wasn't me. And so the next day I started my abstinence and I had roommates. I had two roommates for a very brief period of time. And they weren't people I really wanted to live with. But I invited them in. I had a big two-bedroom, two-bath apartment. They didn't like where they lived. They were my former next-door neighbors. And it was Christmas time. And they worked at the studios at Warner Brothers, and they would make these fabulous cookies that were Santa Clauses and sleds and candy canes and reindeer. And they were all gorgeous. They looked like they could be in the cover of a, Good Housekeeping or Sunset magazine. I had to put the cookies under the table on the chair so that I could have my cottage cheese and my fruit and eat my three meals a day. I had to pretend it wasn't there, and I couldn't go down numerous aisles in the grocery store because things that were hermetically sealed, somehow I could smell, and I was afraid of being triggered. So this program, what the hell, you guys, I must have gone over time. It looks like 26 minutes. I think it's
Yes.
my time. One
Yes, it
minute?
is.
One more
Yes.
minute. Okay.
Too.
Well, that's my story, you guys. I'm really, really grateful to be here. I feel so blessed to be a member of this program. I'm here for anyone that has questions or wants to call me. My phone number is right there, Pacific Standard Time. I didn't have that. And give me a call. If I don't pick up the phone, I'll call you back. So thank you, Rich, so much for asking me to share tonight. It's a blessing to be able to share my recovery with you, and I'm here to help anyone that wants help with their eating and with their life, because that's where it all began for me. Thank you. Thank you again.